Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:05 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is May 10th, and today I thought I would kick off with the Australian market, where the ASX 200 Financials Index has been mostly ranging for a decade and is towards the lower side of that range. Did pull back rather sharply last week and has steadied a little in here this week. Now, the RBA is still raising interest rates. Inflationary pressures, they've probably peaked, but they haven't come down very much just yet. And the government is probably going to announce its first surplus since 2008, but is unwilling to spend that money in order to try and get inflation back under control. So that basically means that we're still in a tighter than normal liquidity environment. And if we then just focus on the banks, so this is the ASX 300 Banks Index, then the downward dynamic last week is more pronounced, and it does have more top formation characteristics. We can also then, I think, just pull in a bit more back history, and we can see very clearly that the banks have been going sideways for a good long period of time. Now, when we think then that banks represented by far the largest weighting on the ASX 200 over most of the last decade. Well, the ASX is not, it hasn't been ranging for a decade, it's been trending higher. And a lot of the reason for that is because of healthcare and technology. Now, the index is still steady in the region of the 200-day moving average. And the materials sector, which is one of the major revenue generators for Australia, is still also quite steady in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, I thought it was particularly interesting in here today that the announcements for outright government support for green hydrogen development didn't really buoy the price of Fortescue all that much. It's still right in the region here of the 200-day moving average and trading more or less around where it was trading right at the end of 2020. Now, of course, there's a big question outstanding about what happens with China and its demand for the kinds of things that Australia exports. So iron ore prices have come back down. They're still deteriorating, hovering around the $100 a metric ton level, which is the upper side of the underlying base formation. But there's certainly a sequence of lower rally highs over the last couple of years. And then copper prices are also a little bit softer in here today. So also coming back down to test the region of the recent lows. So there's a very good chance that we have come to the end of the breakneck pace of infrastructure development in China, and that instead they're going to be much more focused on ensuring that the housing market doesn't crash, but neither do they want it to accelerate higher. And they're more focused now on technological dominance. So that's not nearly as infrastructure dependent as the broad manufacturing sector had been. That also means that there won't be as much money poured into infrastructure development. So if the exports of coal and natural gas and iron ore out of Australia are going to continue to support the government surplus, there's going to have to be a new source of demand. Well, India is certainly the most likely of those potential destinations for flow. And the Nifty index has rebounded quite impressively over the last 6 weeks. So certainly steadying here in the region of the 200-day moving average. There's obviously the question about just is the rupee going to be capable of rallying? And will India have the same kind of manufacturing renaissance that China had in the aftermath of it being allowed into the really the global community? So the question, of course, for the rupee isn't so much about whether it's going to become the strongest currency in the world, but rather will it just simply stop trending downwards? And if it can sustain a move through the 200-day moving average, that would be a really strong confirmation that at the perennial time where India has run budget deficits and trade deficits, which much with much of the rest of the world may be coming to an end. But well, that's probably more a medium-term aspiration than a near-term potential reality. Nevertheless, if the rupee steadies up, then that is going to be a green light for foreign investors to become more active in the Indian market. Then I think there are plenty of other destinations that will also benefit from reshoring out of China, not least because China is becoming more expensive to manufacture in and is not nearly as friendly a destination for foreign flow as it used to be. Indonesia is also a potential beneficiary, and the JCI or Jakarta Composite has been hovering here above the 65 level, holding the breakout from the reasonably lengthy range. But then I think it is also relevant here to pay attention to what's happening in terms of the currency performance. So when we look at the iShares MSCI Indonesia ETF, which is US dollar denominated, it hasn't quite yet broken up out of this range, but I think that it is more likely than not that it will do. And just to round out some of those other big beneficiaries of nearshoring, reshoring, or friendshoring, the Mexican ETF has cleared the sequence of lower rally highs and is breaking out now to new recovery highs. This is a clear pattern of outperformance. And Mexico is likely to be one of the primary beneficiaries of cooler relationships between the USA and China. Now, when we think then about what's going on in Europe, well, there is a lot of movement in geopolitical circles. So, Italy has formally announced that they're going to pull out of the Belt and Road Initiative. Of course, the fact that they really had only signed a memorandum of understanding and that those aren't generally taken all that seriously. So, this is really just a more of a media phenomenon rather than a real phenomenon, not least because there are a large number of Italian businesses owned by Chinese interests. Then you had Germany today saying that they're potentially going to create a committee to look more intently at Chinese investments in key pieces of infrastructure. So that was one of the headlines, but at the same time, they let China's investment in the port of Hamburg go ahead. So there is certainly an attitude within Europe to try and make their case heard, make their views heard with regard to China, but at the same time not do too much to impact the burden of trade. And the Eurostoxx index continues to hold here above the 200-day moving average. Now, it was in mildly negative territory in here today. Now, inflationary pressures in the USA eased back somewhat, and the euro was mildly in positive territory today. Now, we've had a good-sized rally in the euro over the last 6 to 8 months, and it is now in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and that is the first area of potential resistance. Well, it's not the first area, it's the next area of potential resistance. And the pound is up now to about 126 and also testing the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But I think more importantly here, it has pushed up into the overhead trading range, and it does look like that breakdown following the pensions crisis in the third quarter of last year looks like a failed downside break. But we are at a potential area of resistance. And then we have the FTSE 250, which has paused here in the region of the 200-day moving average. So we're not quite out of the woods yet with European stock markets. We've had good-sized rallies, and now I think we're due some consolidation. And then I think it's particularly relevant that when we think about the S&P 500, well, it was in positive territory in here today and well off its lows, so pushing up again towards the 4200 level. And it is being led higher by the performance of the AI sector. We can see that it is companies like Nvidia and Meta have been, and Salesforce for that matter, have been among the best performers so far this year, but they were also among the best performers in here today. So we have Alphabet up over 4% and Amazon also doing well. So then I think that's relevant. That one thing that is quite clear is that investors aren't worried about valuations right now. So Google, for example, is on a price to sales ratio of 5, which is not especially demanding. And the share has popped on the upside today and is pulling away from the most recent range. So investors beginning to give the benefit of the doubt to its experience in the artificial intelligence sector. And Salesforce is rushing now to implement the generative AI platform into its own system. And the share was also rewarded by popping on the upside in here today as well. And I think Palantir is also likely to be among those that is more favored by investors, not least because they're willing to embrace it with both hands. And I think that's going to be the differentiation between the winners and losers within the sector. But then just remember that Salesforce is among the biggest constituents of the cloud computing ETF, and it's clearly outperforming. And the ETF itself is steadying, and there is a sequence of higher reaction lows since the beginning of this year, but it hasn't quite yet broken higher. I think the balance of probabilities is that it will be dragged higher in due course. So we've definitely got a narrowing of breadth, and the clear outperformers right now are those that have got some clear leverage to the artificial intelligence sector. So ASML is also firming here from the region of the 200-day moving average, and here, excuse me, AMD. I do apologize. AMD has also been steadying from the region of the two, excuse me. I do apologize. So AMD has also steadied from the region of the 200-day moving average and broken the medium-term downtrend. Now, when we look at valuations for some of these companies, AMD is a lot less expensive on a price to sales ratio than Nvidia. Nvidia is a really expensive stock, so it's been given a great deal of leeway in terms of its ability to continue to benefit far out into the future from just about any trend that comes down the pipe. And Tesla, with a much vaunted investment in in autonomy, which is perhaps the pinnacle of artificial intelligence, is not firing. And the share was in negative territory today. It has not been able to push back above the 200-day moving average, and this price war underway is continuing to weigh. So the Nasdaq is leading on the upside because of these artificial intelligence stocks, and just a one-way bet that this is really the only game in town. Then, when we think about the Russell 2000 index, it's right in the region of its lows, and the regional banks index is still trending downwards and doing so in a rather aggressive manner. So inflationary pressures are easing, and I think we are at this interesting position right now where bond yields are starting to come back down, and that is being viewed as a really strong positive development for the technology sector. I think it is The triumph of hope over experience to think that once inflation has overshot on the upside, that it won't overshoot on the downside. But until that actually happens, I think investors aren't going to be willing to price in the potential that it could. The money to be made right now is in giving the upside the benefit of the doubt, even if the risks of a deeper economic contraction continue to rise as liquidity conditions continue to tighten. And the continued underperformance of some of the large commercial property investors, I think, is worth paying attention to. So Brookfield Corp is still trending downwards, and Blackstone is also in a medium-term downtrend. And this doesn't look like these are huge investors, some of the biggest holders of commercial property and residential property in the world, and they're underperforming in a profound manner. The banks that have generally lent to commercial property are in some of them in terminal declines, and that does have at the potential to be a big knock-on factor for liquidity in the future. So we're not out of the woods yet, but artificial intelligence is certainly where the focus of attention is on right now, and these breakouts that we've seen within the technology sector are certainly encouraging. Now, the challenge right now is in the late 1990s, we had benign monetary conditions and a strong technology bull case. This time around, we have a strong technology bull case from artificial intelligence, and we do not have accommodative monetary conditions. We have rather the opposite. So, that to me suggests that there is more risk today than there was in 1998. And I guess I think that is perhaps the biggest takeaway. And it does imply that when interest rates do begin to come back down, it will be in response to more money printing and economic weakness. Gold prices today were pretty much unchanged, and I think the most important thing right now is that they're holding the $2,000 level. And as long as that remains the case, I think that's about the most benign outcome you could possibly wish for. And once this consolidation has run its course, then I think there will be significant potential for additional upside. But I'm not quite yet willing to commit additional funds because we still have somewhat overbought conditions. And occasional bouts of volatility are to be expected in gold prices. So I continue to be willing to buy the dips, and I'm just rather suspicious about the size of the downward dynamics we've seen over the last 6 weeks, even though prices really haven't gone anywhere yet. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.